You know, I know her many years ago, when she was a fellow. But one thing about all Lebanese fellows that we train, they never age. In fact, they always look young, so we have decided to clone their genes and import it to, sort of export it to Canada. It's always a pleasure to be here. This is not my first time. It's nice to be here, seeing friends, not only from Lebanon, but also from Iraq and from England. It's certainly better than going to the ATS. At least I don't need to give my computer, and I don't know to explain myself being an Iraqi origin to Trump. So I will come again and again here. So you can see that I move from Montreal temporary to Sharjah University, trying a new job. We used to do skiing. We also here do skiing, but different type of skiing. We see a lot of sun. Now, I'd like to go through this. The topic they gave me is IL-5 from discovery to clinical implication. And to me, this is a journey. The name of the disease is asthma. The target is IL-5. The drugs, as you can see, two of them are already approved, one on the process. But the story started in 1990, before Omar has done his PhD in Imperial College. It was in Imperial College, and the cost is more than $500 million, maybe approaching $1 billion. Now, at that time in 1990, we started to do biopsies, and the first thing which attracted our sort of attention was sort of these eosinophils there. We see a lot of them in asthma compared. Now it's a common sort of knowledge. And I can tell you at that time, we didn't know what these eosinophils are doing because the idea was those are end-stage cells. But anyway, they are very nice. They are red. So we say asthma is an eosinophilic disease. And my supervisor, maybe Omar and others know him, Barry Kay, want to use my expertise to look at this biopsy. And I came, I did my PhD in molecular medicine, and then one of them called in situ hybridization. So this information is really the first time I have told the audience about it. And he said, can you try in situ on these sections? I said, we need a DNA, you know. The only DNA we have in Brompton Hospital was IL-5. We have no idea what IL-5. So whoever tell you this is a hypothesis, it's a matter of chance that we throw this probe. And I came to Barry Kay and said, look, I'm seeing all these black dots, which you are seeing them here, which are positive for IL-5, these ones. So that, we did the experiment many, many times, and then I was convinced that this is something important. So we start to dissect what IL-5 is doing. And IL-5 is one of what we call interleukins, and it has receptors. There's two types of receptors. You get the reason I'm saying that, because the drugs I'm going to describe to you based on this information, alpha receptor and beta receptors. And then when we look to those receptors, where are these receptors? They are in the progenitor cells of eosinophils. So eosinophils, they come from the bone marrow. If they don't carry this receptor, they will not differentiate. And until that time, when we were trying to grow eosinophil, they die, unless you put IL-5 with them. So we thought that IL-5 is the molecule which is important for eosinophils. They help them to differentiate. They help them to survive. They prevent apoptosis. And without IL-5, those eosinophils would not grow and would not stay in the tissue. So we decided to go further into this and try to test it on tissue. It was difficult to take tissue from the lung, so we took it from the nose, and we did what we call exoplant. So the exoplant basically here are pieces of inferior tibidin that we took. Ian McKay used to take it for us. We culture it here, and we add antigen on it. If the patient is allergic to grass pollen, we add grass pollen or other things. And then we want to see whether that will induce IL-5. And then we went further, me and Steve Durham, and we put this allergen in the inferior tibia itself. with using one of our fellows. At that time, fellow cannot say no. And then we biopsy them. We took this biopsy from there, and we looked to IL-5, and again, IL-5 came very strong there. So it seemed that allergen challenge or creating an allergen model induced IL-5. For sure, it was associated with eosinophils also. Now, not only IL-5 is increased, but the transcription factor that induces it is also increased, which is called GATA3. And there is now a lot of interest in this one. So we were convinced that IL-5 is upregulated. IL-5 is important for eosinophil, and if asthma is an eosinophilic disease, if we block this one, we will cure us. We will cure asthma. We'll be very famous. Okay. Now, those information which really started in the UK, in the Imperial College, was taken by a lot of scientists in the US. And then at that time, the human research was not really very popular in the US. And they were doing it on mice, asthmatic mice. I don't believe there's an asthmatic mice. So they were cloning the gene. They were, you know, overexpressing, knocking it down, and they showed that they can treat mouse asthma. If they knock IL-5, mice will not develop asthma. If they overexpress it, they would develop airway hyperresponsiveness, and they persuade the drug company to go immediately and try to generate an antibody. So they thought if we block IL-5, then we will block the eosinophil differentiation, the eosinophil migration, the eosinophil that's with ataxin, the eosinophil survival, and they will treat asthma. So the antibody was basically a neutralizing antibody that will attack the IL-5 in the circulation and block that from reaching its receptor on the target cell. And that was the antibody, which is the anti-IL-5. And at that time, we were very optimistic we're going to cure asthma, we're going to cure any eosinophilic diseases, including hypereosinophilic syndrome, atopic dermatitis, even COPD. So the list was there that we're going to start with asthma, and you know we're going to go further into that one. At that time, I moved to Canada in 1992. And then Peter Barnes, and Omar know Peter Barnes, took this opportunity, immediately did a clinical trial on anti-IL-5, thinking that he's going to really discover that. Now, the first clinical trial he did, which is an antigen challenge model, which is actually the number of patients who are not there. I'm just telling you the history because we're going to go, as Omar was telling you about phenotype, we're going to go to phenotype in a minute. And then he published his Lancet paper saying that anti-IL-5 didn't do anything. Eosinophil are not important. Anti-IL-5, you know, Peter Barnes, he can change his mind every minute. That's okay. But, you know, he was all over the world saying that IL-5 is not important, eosinophil is not important. I was glad that I left Canada. I left England, I went to Canada. And he showed that the eosinophil are blocked in the blood, but not in the sputum. And in fact, after that, another study also was negative. So there was two big studies which were negative. They were selecting those patients moderate to severe asthma, giving them IL-5, but nothing happened to the FEV1 or airway hyperresponsiveness. So that's what they were looking because it's an antigen model. So Barry Kay decided to do a study, and he did a study with his fellow there, which he showed different thing. He showed still it is negative. It didn't reach the significant value, but the eosinophil he showed in the lung were not blocked completely. And then being so careful, as Barry Kay is, he wrote this article saying eosinophil role remain uncertain as anti-IL-5 only partially depleted numbers in asthmatic airway. So he changed his mind, and I remember he saw me in a meeting. He said, all that work that me and you did was not right. I say, okay, that's okay. But there is another respiratory physician who really raised the question again. And that is Paulo Byrne. I remember I brought him here with me. By the way, he's also a dean. It seemed that respiratory physicians, they can do nothing else but deans. A lot of the deans are respiratory physicians. So this guy, for people whose language is not English, this word means the death. Is it the death of eosinophil and IL-5? He wrote this editorial saying that maybe we have to look again because this is not the right design. Maybe we are not looking into the right patient. Or maybe this is the death of IL-5. After at that time, SmithKline has spent a lot of money on this. Now, while he was doing there, the era of personalized medicine came. And rather, the people start to understand the idea that we cannot treat patients with the same drugs. We have to phenotype. People have done it before us in cardiology, in cancer, and always we hear this word, personalized. Also, in the beginning, I didn't understand what they mean, but, you know, still sometimes I have a problem, but, you know, personalized medicine and phenotyping. And then we, our group and another group, have looked carefully into the severe spectrum of asthma. And that become, as Omar was saying, 40% or 35% do not respond well to the steroid at that time, you know, whether it is due to the inhaler itself or the steroid itself. And we discovered that there's many phenotypes. One of them is an inflammatory, the other one is not an inflammatory. Sometimes you don't see a lot of inflammation there. But even the inflammatory ones, some of them, they contain eosinophils, the other one have no eosinophils, but they have neutrophils. And we know that neutrophils do not respond well to steroid, and the eosinophils are supposed to be respond well to steroids. It became a habit, people start to think, okay, it's easy to differentiate those from the biopsy, which is not practical, from the sputum. Paramnir has really, and you know, has pushed for that, to phenotype those patients into eosinophilic and neutrophilic. And the question came from two groups simultaneously in McMaster University and in Leicester University, saying, if we select the patients, and now we all speak about selecting the patients, I'm giving a talk on Saturday, do we need to phenotype our patient before thermoplasty? So before we used to, drug company want us to do all asthmatics. So that they did that, and they published two papers simultaneously. The group in McMaster and Leicester saying that, I don't have time to go through all the detail of these papers because we have many things coming after that, saying that if we select the patients according to the eosinophil numbers in the sputum, here they were using the sputum, and we give the same monoclonal antibody and we do special analysis, then those, the two studies look positives. Although the outcome is different, one of them looked to the exacerbation, the other one looked to the decrease of the steroids. But the same now, we are seeing a positive signal if we select those patients. And I think those two papers have revived and bring the life again to anti-IL-5. And drug companies went again, especially GSK and later AstraZeneca and Teva, I think, the third company. They went and spend a lot of money to really do a number of clinical trials using the selection of the patient according to the number of eosinophils. But the number of eosinophils in the sputum is not easy to do. How long I have? 5, 10 minutes?
5 minutes.
Okay. So the number of eosinophils to determine in the sputum for a center, Imperial College, or McGill where I was working, or McMaster is not difficult, but we want to have a better, or investigator wanted to have a better way to count, to identify eosinophils. And the idea at that time that peripheral blood would not give us a good answer. However, after that, there was two papers again in New England Journal of Medicine from two separate groups who use blood eosinophils as a sort of indication for eosinophilic asthma, patients who do not respond to the optimal dose of combined therapy, steroids and bronchodilators. And they did these studies and they published with larger number because the first two studies were really the number of patients were not high. These two groups in New England Journal, they found that if you treat those patients, for example, here, and The other thing which we started to look at one stage, we were looking to FEV1 and sort of like hyper-responsiveness. Remember, those patients are remodeled. They are chronic. They are severe patients. So those, they calculate that eosinophil degranulate inflammation cause exacerbation. So if we kill eosinophil, we would decrease exacerbation. So exacerbation become the sort of the outcome of this. And now they show in those two papers, they show also some effect on pulmonary function, but didn't reach most of them statistically significant value. But with the injection of this anti-IL-5 in the two study, they showed decrease in the number of exacerbation, very significant decrease. And these two papers, which show this one also, and they show the quality of life, and they also show effect of pulmonary function, but it did not really reach a very good statistical value. But the quality of life was improved in those patients. Now, is the level of eosinophils correlate with the improvement? If we take a patient who has a lower 300, for example, or have 700 or lower, the response, the decrease in this exacerbation, does that correlate with the level of basic eosinophils? This paper, or I think this was a poster that I saw, has really demonstrated that the level, the basic level, the higher the number of eosinophils we see in the baseline, the blood, the better response we see giving anti-IL-5 to those patients. And those patients who have a higher level of eosinophil compared to the placebo, they respond very well. Now, that could be because those patients are severe by themselves. Now, following that, then the FDA was satisfied, and this drug has been since 2015 available. I don't know if it's available here. It was approved by the USA. It was approved by European Commissions. And this is, you can see here, because I don't want people to think that we can give this one alone. Those are all as an add-on therapy. So here's what they wrote the FDA. For the maintenance treatment of severe asthma in patient aged, remember this one, 12 and older, and with a eosinophilic phenotype in combination with other medication used to treat asthma. Yes, you might reduce the steroid, but do not stop the treatment. Now, the European, they gave another indication, but the drug become now popular. It's expensive, but it's being used in those patients. So this is the trademark of the drug here, and it is an add-on therapy there. Usually, we give it every 4 weeks. It is subcutaneous. The dose is depend on the weight. And then the side effect of these drugs are really not very high. And you're going to see even long time treatment that is not associated with a lot of side effects. You might see some allergy, you might see some swelling of the face, you might see some itching, sometimes gastritis there. But it's something that will prevent. Now, the only thing one have to be very careful with this anti-IL-5 is if the patients have parasitic infestations or is exposed to parasitic infestation, we have to be very careful. We don't know if they are safe in pregnancy, in lactating, we don't know, and in children, we don't know. Okay. Now, this is also a recent paper, just because now it is approved, post-marketing paper, which they show that, because you know how long we can give this drug? And the more we give anti-IL-5, at one stage there was a lot of confusion. If we give anti-IL-5, we're disturbing our immune response, we'll make those patients more prone to something else. But this paper recently has been published, which showed that the side effect, you know, that we see is not exaggerated when we give long-time treatment of this drug. Now, that's not the only drug which has been FDA approved. There's another drug which is similar, more or less similar to the first one, which is produced, I think, by Teva, which, again, the clinical trials show more or less similar. The only difference, this one is given intravenously. The other one is subcutaneously. This one intravenously. I remember when we start to give the IL-5 in the beginning, we were using it frequently. Now we use it every 4 weeks. So this one there, and it is also improved exacerbation, improved FEV1, but not to statistically significant value, but certainly improved the quality of life. And it has a little bit more side effect, this one, but not, again, that alarming. And this one is only indicated for patients which are 18 years and older. It's not indicated for the 12 years. The FDA has not indicated that for the 12 years old. Now, you can block, I have only two slides left, you can block IL-5 by an antibody. But you can also block IL-5 by blocking its receptor. That the slide I showed you in the beginning was alpha receptor and beta receptor. So if you block the receptor, you will not allow the floating antibody protein to be attached to the receptor. And that's what AstraZeneca has done here. This is a drug that AstraZeneca has really pushed for the last few years there, which is blocking the receptor. I don't know if I can pronounce the name well, but this is what it is. This one blocked the receptor there, and then it has very significant effect. Again, actually, it is more rapid to block the eosinophil in the blood, in the tissue, and in the tissue and in the sputum. And this is even single dose. Sometimes single dose can prevent eosinophils to keep the reduction in eosinophil almost 3 months in the blood and in the sputum. They have gone into phase 1 studies, and they have gone for phase 2 studies, and they went further because you all speak, I think last year I spoke about ICOS, this is a trendy name, which is asthma COPD overlap syndrome, and they did a trial on the ICOS thinking they would give it a different indication. Unfortunately, that was wasn't that strongly positive, but and they're trying. And then they are now going for phase 3 through 6 trials. And that's something called the Windward Program. They have 6 trials. They finished 2 trials, which both of them were positive, just been presented at the ERIS here. And then they are continuing with those 6 clinical trials. And that, if it gets to be approved, we have now, in a matter of 25 years from the discovery, to produce 3 drugs. But what is the percentage of severe asthmatic that we can treat with anti-IL-5? And that is something I was surprised when I saw this one. In fact, if you put all the biological and go with the sort of indication where they fit into the anti-IgE, anti-IL-5, or anti-IL-4, then we still have 60% of severe asthmatic who do not fit this criteria. So we have still a lot of work to do, maybe thermoplasty, maybe other medications, I don't know, but I'm just telling you how complicated severe asthma is, how many phenotypes we have. Even with those expensive biological, we still have 60% of severe asthmatic who do not respond well to steroid. Hopefully by using better inhalers, you know, we can improve. I always actually agree with Omar. Always when we used in our severe asthma program, before we categorize them as severe asthma, we use small molecules and to reach the small area, and that can bring them from the severe to the moderate things. But there's still patients that there's a lot of work, and I can tell you most of the drug development going about the 60% of the patients. I want to leave you with this slides. And we heard this morning or this afternoon a lecture about media and the sort of like internet and about the vast sort of amount of information that we have to digest. I remember the first paper we published in JCI in 1992 about IL-5. Just here, look how many paper has been published just on IL-5 and asthma. 3,650 papers has been published in the last 25 years to try and treat a small percentage of asthmatic, but those are an important patient that we need to take care of them. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Dr. Taiba. We're going to leave the question for the end of the session.